on parole. You cannot leave the state. You're in my custody. You cannot go. So just quiet down, my little one, and call me Dad.
I just did what the map said. I made four lefts.
Four lefts? As I circle, you idiot!
Are you sure?
It's another long and miserable story that I'd rather not get into. Right now, there's a three-legged dog over there staring at me.
Can we stop and get some ring-dings and milk?
Ring-dings and milk?
Ring-dings and milk.
Oh, yeah. Then we can get some balloons. We can go to the puppet show. What are you, 2 years old?
Life is great, yeah?
Huh? Isn't life great?
All right, quit pressuring me, please!
Oh, this is saying, something smells good. Nothing better than that smell in the whole wide world.
Yeah, he smells good.
We got the beginnings of a real situation here. I just robbed these people. I don't want to get to know them, all right?
I know how your mind works. You know exactly what you're doing. And the whole time, you stand there with this who me expression on your face.
Lights, camera, action. Welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour Films. As you all know, I'm Ross Bacon. I'm joined by my co-host Mike McGregor. Mike, say hi.
How's everyone doing?
And as you should know by now, we are two dudes to drink and talk about movies. Now, we are on the final episode of 2023. We are at the final week of our Career Enders Month. And we decided, since talking about another ended career would be too depressing, we decided we'd talk about an unkillable career. A career that has so many ups and downs and terrible movies, but yet somehow remains strong in the year 2023. And of course, we have come back to our man, Nicolas Cage.
Is there a better way to end the year than talking about Nick Cage? Arguably not that bad movies and one pretty bad movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the one that's really, really bad would be the first one we talk about, at least in my opinion. I kind of fucking hated Trapped in Paradise, but... Well, so we'll be talking about Trapped in Paradise, then we're talking about Bangkok Dangerous, and then we're going to talk about Drive Angry. And spoiler alert for when we get to that part, if there's anybody that's on the Amber Heard side of the Johnny Depp Amber Heard divide, you're going to want to stop listening at that point. Now, before we get into the unkillable career of Nick Cage, we have to talk about what we're drinking. So, Mike, what do you have?
Okay, so last week I talked about how Yule had started, and I'm keeping up with that theme to end the year, because I believe Yule still goes until maybe next week.
Sure, I have no idea.
So I am drinking mead. I don't think I've drank mead on the podcast. It's maybe the Joker episode. I think I did it for the Joker episode.
I feel like you have, but I don't remember what episode it was.
I've done ciders and stuff. I don't think I've done mead since then.
I don't know. And Yule goes until January 1st.
Okay. So, perfect. And so this is Nordic honey wine with ginger and hops added. The meadery that makes it, I'm going to completely mess this up. It's Dansk Mjød, I think.
Sure. Sure.
But it says it's based on a Viking recipe from about the year 1700. And like the bottle's cool because it almost looks like a clay bottle. And you're goddamn right. I did the whole bite the cork out of it thing.
Nice. Nice. There you go. And is it Mjod, M-J-O-D?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. They're also the ones that do Viking blood. I've seen Viking blood, and okay. I've always wanted to grab it, but I never have. But yeah, I believe it is, because it's like Mjolnir, but it's Mjod or something, or Mjod or something like that. I don't know. I don't speak ancient Norse. Wish I did.
So I'm always fascinated with how mead tastes, because it's like sweet, but not as sweet as some like regular wines. It's always an interesting flavor, and this one... being made with ginger hops gives it like Like, over Christmas, I mixed it with some apple cider, and that was freaking delicious.
Nice, nice. Yeah, and all right, so as I think more and more about the beer that I grabbed, I feel like there was something I should have, there's instructions I should have followed. But what I have is Drippy Popsicle. Now, Drippy Popsicle is from Abomination Brewing, and they are in North Haven, Connecticut. So a little bit up north, but still in the East Coast. Now, it's a fruited smoothie sour with strawberry, vanilla, and marshmallow. Now, it doesn't say specifically to drink it this way, but it does say on the label, make your own drippy popsicle at home. Step one, stick can in freezer. Two, wait an hour. And three, open, pour, and serve. So I feel like I should have stuck this in my freezer instead of just in the fridge when I bought it. But there's little pieces like of sediment or something floating around inside. So maybe that's what would have frozen. And you know, maybe they were the flavor crystals or some shit. I don't know. But it's a sour and it tastes it, but it tastes kind of like, it kind of tastes like, let me see, what's that flavor? It's kind of like, it is like a strawberry vanilla-ish popsicle. So I really wonder what would have happened had I don't know, followed the instructions that were potentially on here. Who knows? Who cares? It tastes good. So let's get going. Let's begin with the wonderful year of 1994, which saw our man Nick in a little movie called Trapped in Paradise. Now, this point in his career, he had done his famous, I believe, non-speaking role in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He had done Valley Girl. He had done Rumblefish. He had done Peggy Sue Got Married and Raising Arizona. He'd done Moonstruck. Then he did Vampire's Kiss, which we talked about in our Cage Madness episode. So that right there is kind of like where the first arc of his career kind of starts to go on the downslope. And they did Wild at Heart, Zandali. Everyone remember us doing Zandali? And then he does Honeymoon in Vegas and Deadfall. In 93, which one of the greatest sustained screaming of the word fuck. One of the greatest things in cinema history. And then he does Guarding Tess, It Could Happen to You, and then this movie. He does Guarding Tess, It Could Happen to You, and Trapped in Paradise all in the same year. Now, it was the next year that he would do Leaving Las Vegas and then come back up on the other swing, then the first up, second coming again of Nicolas Cage on that part of his career. But he had to do Trapped in Paradise, which directed by this asshole named George Gallo, who was just a writer of Bad Boys, the whole 10 yards and codenamed The Cleaner. But here's the thing. Right off the bat, this movie just asked too much. It asked me to believe that John Lovitz, Dana Carvey, and Nicolas Cage are all brothers.
Maybe they were adopted.
They would have had to. There's no way those three human beings are related.
Maybe they're half brothers.
They would have had to be, man. It's especially like maybe Dana Carvey. I can almost believe Dana Carvey because he's kind of got that like, not quite pointy features that Nick has, but they're similar. Like you could almost believe like a half brother situation. But John Lovitz is an entire creature unto himself. There is no relation there to anybody.
Maybe these are three of the brothers from Twins that ended up finding each other.
If this was secretly triplets, that would be amazing. That would just be awesome. If this was secretly triplets. Oh man, it'd be great.
All right.
And then
this movie, I can say one good thing about it.
That it ends?
It had some very classic, like, over-the-top Nick Cage in it. And you know what? If that is present, I can make it through the movie.
Yeah, I definitely want to know. I want to see the movie that Nick Cage thought he was making. I really want to see what movie he thought he was making. Because this movie, if you've never seen it, It's about three brothers who are basically bank robbers who get stuck in this place called Paradise. And it's paradise, like, nowhere's Pennsylvania, isn't it? It's, like, in the middle of, like, nowhere Pennsylvania. But it's kind of up north Pennsylvania because it's close enough to New York, but close enough to Philly. But yet somehow far enough away from either of those that it makes sense to just be kind of trapped in this one spot. And Philadelphia, they even make a mention of it, is, a like, a good distance away. But there is this town is just populated with the greatest people in the history of the world. These are the most caring, small town, loving people ever. The most trusting little small town
you can ever think of. I just love these people. I don't want to get to know them.
Right, exactly. And really, the gag of the movie is that Dana Carvey and John Lovitz get out of prison and they basically trick Nick Cage into robbing a bank in Paradise, Pennsylvania. Based off of a tip that one of John Lovitz's guy learned from a guy in prison. Now, right off the bat, you're like, okay, whatever. But just know that Dana Carvey in this movie, arguably the guy that you would be laughing the most at, is completely unlikable and completely unwatchable. Because he's doing, and I don't even know, the only way to describe it is the way that Roger Ebert described it, because I watched the At the Movies for this move for this to see what their take was, because Roger Ebert hated it. Gene Siskel, may he rot in hell, this was one of the movies that he actually didn't like that I agree with. So at one point, Roger Ebert calls it a twerpy voice. Like, it's a twerpy voice. I was like, you know what? That's kind of the only way to describe this voice. He's like a little twerp, and you're like, okay, why is he doing this? But then the other caveat of the character is that he's always looking like Robert De Niro, like Robert De Niro face, like the scrunched up Robert De Niro face, and he's always stealing everything because they say he's a kleptomaniac. Now, I did a little research into kleptomania. I feel like from what I could find, yes, it is an uncontrollable impulse to steal that these people have, but it's kind of like needing a cigarette all the time. But it's they don't steal literally everything they see. It's not that kind of a situation. They're not perpetually stealing things 24 hours a day, which is what this character is doing, and it's awful. It's annoying as fuck.
Now, again, there are two scenes where I find it funny, but it's mostly because of how Nick Cage plays off of him. He's like, can we stop for ring-dings and milk? And he's like, ring-dings and milk? All right. Then we'll get some balloons and go to the puppet show. What are you, 2 years old? And then he's like, yeah, it said to make four lefts. Four lefts makes a circle!
Just the way that he responds to pretty much everybody in this movie is that, like, over-the-top vampire's kiss Nick Cage.
Which is why I don't hate this movie. I don't hate it.
It's the only redeemable quality that this movie has. And it's because the craziest thing is, it's like, what movie did he think he was making?
Well, if everyone was on board with his vision, this movie would be hilarious.
It would be great. Or at least it would be one of those, like, weird-ass, like, Nick Cage movies. You know, you'd be like, wait, what is happening this entire movie? You know, I don't understand, but I gotta keep watching because it's ridiculously compelling. Whereas there's John Lovitz, who is only good in small little doses. And he's small little doses of John Lovitz, basically. In this, we get way too much John Lovitz. We get so much John Lovitz. And the fact that John Lovitz is ostensibly one of the leading men in this movie is disgusting, because that man should never have led anything, let alone a couple movies, you know? And
John Lovitz does seem like a really good guy, though, from everything I've read about him.
I've read that too, but I've also read a couple times where he's kind of like an entitled jerk off. But for more often than not, he is usually a decent dude. But still, it's like his on-screen character that he always played, that John Lovett's character, is dialed up to 13 in this, like Nick Cage is dialed up to 13.
You need him more like a League of Their Own type character, where he's like, he's exactly. The seasoning, not the meal.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's tough to watch, because then you can't lean on anybody in this movie to actually pay attention to, because Nick Cage is also only kind of in this movie. Dana Carvey is all over this damn thing, but he's just stealing everything. And I guess we're supposed to be laughing the whole time. But then John Lovitz is there, and it's like they can't focus on one character until they have to focus on Nick Cage and can never pronounce her name properly. But it's I think it's Madchen Amick or something like that. She's from Twin Peaks is what she's from. And she's also from Riverdale for our younger listeners. And it really sucks, because they try to shoehorn this like love story in between them, but yet the entirety of the movie, until the last 30 seconds of the movie, he pretty much hates these guys. And she is just disgusted by them. She doesn't want anything to do with them at all. And yet somehow, like, walks off into the sunset with Nick Cage at the end as he settles down in Paradise PI.
Yeah. The only thing I have to say about that is, all right, it's a goddamn robbery.
Just Nick Caging it up, man. It's crazy as hell that he gets away with it in this movie.
Now, you shouldn't watch this movie. What you should do is look up this movie on YouTube. They have a clips reel of just Nick Caging it up.
Which is all you need. That's all you need. There's nothing else going on in this movie. You know, it's the only other thing going on in this movie is that John Ashton, welcome back for the second episode in a row. He's Taggart in Beverly Hills Cop. He and his buddy are Ed and Clovis, and apparently they're deputies in this town. Even though this police force is like 15 full-fledged cops in this tiny-ass town of like 100 people, don't know why they need to be deputies in this, because there are plenty of cops in this town to cover everybody. But they basically know that Nick Cage and his brothers have robbed the bank, but they're trying to prove it. But they're also trying to, like, at one point steal the money from them. It's the movie can't figure out what anybody else in this movie needs to do other than the three main characters. You know, it's very annoying, and it's the whole time I feel like someone's like nudging me in the ribs, like, are you laughing yet. It's like, no, I'm never gonna laugh, and it's my only laughs are gonna come at Nick Cage losing his mind and me trying to figure out what the fuck he's doing. You know,
yet this is only the second worst movie this week in my eyes.
That is true. I would I don't know though. It's so borderline with Bangkok Dangerous though. It's so borderline, because I mean, we'll get to it, but borderline Bangkok Dangerous is so much worse when you know that it's a remake of another movie done by the same directors. So it's like, oh wait, this is terrible because the actual people are involved and it's somehow worse. How did you do that? But then there's the only legit laugh that I had in this movie came from Richard Jenkins, who plays an FBI agent who's trying to track down, you know, the brothers essentially. And he sees the license plates on their car, and the license plate is like D-U-H something out. So he goes, it's duh. And he goes, license plates. Oh, that's appropriate. Probably vanity plates. And that made me laugh. I was like, all right, so somebody got a joke in here. But it's
the other scene that I thought was kind of funny where John Lovitz is like, would you be horribly upset with me if I told you there may be a small arsenal in the trunk?
That was a decent line and a good delivery by Lovitz. And yeah, they do open the trunk and it's got like everything like perfectly like organized and all like the weapons and whatnot. But I don't know, man. This one was tough. And then it's also insane to know that after he made this movie, or maybe while he was making this movie, he was also making Leaving Las Vegas, which is the movie when it comes to Nicolas Cage, you know? That's the one that got him the Oscar. So
yeah, it was the movie until National Treasure 2 came out.
Well, of course. Of course. At the time, of course. We had no idea what was coming down the pike. But then he does that. And then here's the direct run after that. The Rock, Con Air, Face Off, City of Angels, Snake Eyes, 8mm, Gone in 60 Seconds. And then it starts to kind of drop again. But before we keep going on, Mike, how is your mead?
It's good. You know, it feels right to be drinking this out of a hand-carved wooden cup. Yes. I feel like if I was drinking it out of anything else, I wouldn't, like, unless it was, like, one of the horn cups, like, those would be good. But, yeah, yeah. The only way you can enjoy mead is out of a wooden or a cup made out of, like, an antler or a horn.
Or a skull. You gotta drink it out of a skull
that's
or something.
True. That's true.
Yeah.
Like, I just got new I got Japanese-style beer, frosted beer glasses, like, that I saw in Kyoto. My mom ordered them for me for Christmas.
Oh, nice.
And I was going to drink out of that, but I'm like, this is mead. I feel like that had, like, I can wait till next week and do, like, a Lunar New Year theme with that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And there's more of a reason next week to, yeah. To discuss. To drink out of that particular glass.
Oh, yeah.
yeah, there's more of a reason to drink out of it in that one. But, yeah, so I'm sure I did wrong. Drippy Popsicle is good while not frozen or put in a freezer for an hour. It's delicious. And I enjoy it. I'm sure it would be better as a, I don't know, beersicle or whatever it is. Here we go. And now we come to 2008, which was an amazing year for a lot of reasons, but this is the run up to Bangkok Dangerous for Nick Cage. After Gone in 60 Seconds, we get The Family Man. Then we get Captain Corelli's Mandolin. We get Wind Talkers. Something called Sunny, which looks like it has James Franco in it. Ugh. Adaptation. Matchstick Men, National Treasure.
National Treasure in that condescending tone.
No, that was more of a National Treasure. Like, here it is. That's the year he got to it. And then immediately we have Lord of War. And then we have The Weatherman. The Ant Bully, whatever that is. World Trade Center. The Wicker Man. Ghost Rider. When he plays Fu Manchu and the Werewolf Women of the SS in Grindhouse. And then he does Next, which is where I believe he can see like 8 seconds into the future or something like that.
Yeah, I always get that confused with Knowing.
Right, right, right. Well, he can see, he has to decode the future in that one. And in this one, his character can see like, I think it's 2 minutes into the future or something like that. It's not even, it's a weird amount of time. So 07 is Treasure, National Treasure, Book of Secrets. And then in 08, he does Bangkok Dangerous. Right
and
before.
It's incredible to go from such a high to such a low.
It is. It really is. Because this movie is a remake of a 1999 Hong Kong action flick of the same name, directed by the same people. Directed by the Pang brothers. Now, it's one thing to remake your own movie or to do a shot-for-shot remake. And I'm going to say stay tuned in like 7 months because there might be a theme when it comes, or like 3 months, I think, when it comes to that. We may or may not do something like that. But the movies that do that, like literally do full shot-for-shot remakes of their movies. This, on the other hand, was as if the creators took their original movie, hit the shuffle button, or like shook it up in like one of those like a snow globe, and then pulled out at random the things they were going to keep. And it was like, okay, Nicolas Cage, Got it. Okay, he's going to play not the main character from the original. Okay. It's like, and there's going to be a blind, deaf and dumb person. There's going to be a deaf and dumb person. Okay, that's going to be not the main character. It's going to be a woman. Okay. It's like, they're just shuffling all of the plot points from the original, and then they're just putting it out on screen and making it the bluest, greenest, darkest movie you can possibly make. And I don't
and
mean
one red and scene for some reason.
Right. It's like, I don't mean darkest in theme. I mean literally light dark. There is no light in this movie.
So this is the worst thing a Nicolas Cage movie can be. Fucking boring.
Yeah. Yeah. It sucks. Because there's, I mean, the narration alone that comes and goes in this movie. It talks about him being taught. He's like, that's how I was taught, and that's how I was taught, and that's what I was taught in this. I would rather see the movie where he is taught how to become this assassin, this hitman, than the movie that we do see. Because that sounds so much more interesting.
So throughout this movie, we get serious Cage. And you know what? There are movies where serious Cage works. Lord of War is probably my favorite serious Cage.
And the thing is, that's like right before, obviously that's before this by 3 years, but that's not that serious Cage. But he's also, it's also like a knowingly serious Cage. Like he's not cocky, but he's self-assured and he's very confident. But the tone of the movie is, for the most part, like 95% serious. There are some funny shit, like the warlord that he sells to. That guy's pretty funny. Jared Leto, like, being a drug addict is pretty funny. But the rest of the movie, like, okay, this is Nick Cage, and, like, he's serious. It's a serious movie, but it's not lighthearted, but it's not dreadfully serious. This movie, on the other hand, it's like, somebody needs to crack a joke. We need to just put someone in here that has some humor.
My theory is, serious Cage doesn't work in action movies. If you're going to cast Cage in an action movie, you have to either have him go, like, full way over the top Cage, like in, like, when we'll talk next in terms of, like, Drive Angry, or something like Vampire, where he's, like, that over the top. Or you need to go, like, more of a face-off Cage, where it's more toned down, but he's still free to not be totally fucking depressing and serious.
He's allowed to go nuts. Like, in the beginning of Face Off is classic peak amazing Nick Cage. And then when he has to, like, pretend to be John
Travolta as Nick Cage,
when he has to pretend to be John Travolta, it's better, because there are some silly shit that he does. There's some interesting shit that he does. It's very interesting. This movie, he's just like, you can almost tell that this was the period where he was, like, trying to pay off buying a dinosaur skull and shit like that. And it was like, it's like, dude, you gotta at least give us something. Because even your dumbest movies, even the movies that we know you're doing for a paycheck, you at least give us a little bit of Nick Cage. This movie has none of that. There is no Nick Cage in this movie
me is, like, a weird knockoff Leon the Professional, where no one is anywhere close to up to snuff with the actors in Leon the Professional.
Right. Yeah, you could definitely see that. And the thing is, the only thing that this movie really does is give us the hair that Andy Samberg uses for the Get in the Cage segments. that's really the only thing this movie gives us. And other than that, it is almost, I mean, it's not unwatchable. It's just that you shouldn't watch it.
And forgettable.
Yeah, you just shouldn't watch it. I mean, and that's That's not something I can easily say about a Nick Cage movie. Like, there's always something with Nick Cage where you're like, at least watch it for this. At least watch it for this. Like we said with Trapped in Paradise, like Mike was like, go on YouTube and look up the Nick Cage parts of that. Yeah, that's what we should be saying for this movie. There's nothing here like that.
That's, it's like, I don't know if everyone remembers where I'm like, the scale goes from negative 10 to 10, where a bad movie's better than a boring movie. So yeah. This is like a popped on like a somewhere in the negative 1 to 1 range, maybe 2. Where yeah. I look at Trapped in Paradise, and I could give it like a negative 3-ish just because of Insane Cage.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the part that you want to see. Whereas in this, there it's Nick Cage and nothing but Thai actors. And this is all in Thailand, obviously, for Bangkok Dangerous. And these Thai actors are not good actors. They're not. We get the one dude that's like, he's Thailand's Jared Leto from Fight Club. You know, there's that one henchman who does nothing in the movie except like smile at somebody at one point and then die. And then there's the crime boss that's like giving the kids these jobs, these 4 assassinations. That dude, you can tell, is probably, he's probably like a low grade, like in American movies, he would be the guy in a mafia movie that represents like the smallest family at the table, the head of the smallest family at the table in a mafia movie, because this dude's a gangster, but he's not a big time gangster. He doesn't have the charisma of like our leading gangsters, you know, but this dude, it's like, he looks like he's confused in his own movie. It's like he doesn't know why he's there, or rightfully so, because we don't know why he's there either.
That's, I'm watching this movie and I'm trying to think, how do I fix this movie? And you, if you want to keep a similar tone, Nick Cage can't be the star, unfortunately. This is the first movie I've ever watched him go, I'd replace Nick Cage in it, because it's not for him.
Absolutely not. Yeah, and it's not even like, because he plays now Joe in the original movie is the teacher, which is what Nick Cage is. But in the original movie, Kong is the hitman. And Kong is also the deaf and mute guy. And that makes him like an interesting hitman. And that makes his relationships with everybody interesting. Like with his girlfriend that he gets, she can hear, she can talk, she can do everything. But that's what makes their relationship interesting. And then his interactions with Joe is more interesting that way, because our main character is like flawed and has some sort of like disability that he needs to overcome to kind of like, it's compelling to know that this man is like the world's greatest assassin kind of thing. And the problem with this version of that is that it's Nick Cage, and you can't have a movie in this era of his career where Nick Cage doesn't talk. Fast forward to what year? 2021 or 22 with Willy's Wonderland, where he doesn't say a damn word the entire time. That Nicolas Cage can absolutely lead a movie without talking. This movie should have done that. Like, it should have just kept the original formula and tried to bring in the American audience by throwing Nick Cage as the star. But it didn't do that. And it shuffled everything up, because Nick Cage probably saw, he probably saw it and was like, you know what? It's a paycheck. It can pay down some debt, or it can pay off my dinosaur skull or my castle that I bought. All of that shit. Or my tomb in New Orleans, you know, that I've bought. But none of this movie does he even seem like he gives a shit about. Like, it's the scene where he does like the Wing Chun, where he's doing like the slap fighting with defense. It's really, he looks like Steven Seagal nowadays, when Steven Seagal does like the, I'm a slap and flip you, but do nothing else. And this movie is just not, it's not compelling in any possible way. Like, him being like Steven Seagal and just not giving a shit during his training scene. He looks intense, but you can tell the only thing on his mind is, all right, so I'm paying for a tomb in New Orleans. I'm paying for a dinosaur skull. My kid is in a shitty metal band. I named my other kid after Superman. I'm like, it's anything but what he should be doing, which is playing this character.
That's so I watched this movie and I'm like, who would I cast in the lead if I was making this movie, who am I casting to play Nick Cage and who am I bringing in to direct it? So Nick Cage is getting replaced by Javier Bardem if we're doing like an indie make.
I can see that. Get a little Anton Chigurh action up in there.
So like my first choice was Keanu, but like I feel like it would just be a John Wick movie if that happened.
Yeah, that's all it would really turn into.
Where I think Javier Bardem can do like the silent, deadly killer, but this time he gets the like a decent heart rather than truly just a force of nature, like in No Country for Men.
Yeah, not like the literal devil.
And then the director, I want maybe Park Chan-wook, if we're going with Asian directors. He directed Old Boy.
Yeah.
And you get more of an action, but like kung fu, like you get some actual kung fu fight scenes in it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, fuck, I would bring John Woo back. Fucking have John Woo do this shit. You know, that would be great. Like bring, if I would keep Cage and bring in John Woo, at least then you would get some style. Like you would really get some style, you get some flair. With this, now, it's been so long since I've seen the original of this movie. And this is an original, one of those movies where like I happen to randomly catch it on like 3 a.m. Showtime kind of situation. And I was like, oh, this is pretty solid. So when the Nick Cage one came out, I was like, oh, and I watched it. I was like, this is nothing like the original. This is nothing like that. So I can't remember if that one has like some Hong Kong action movie flair to it. I'm sure it does. Because the whole ending of this movie, where Nick Cage is down to one bullet, one man left to kill, and the cops are closing in, and all he has to do is basically take himself out or the person he's going to kill, and he does both with one bullet by putting his head next to the other guy's and pulling the trigger against his own temple, and he shoots both of them in the head, thus accomplishing his goal. That right there is a very Hong Kong action movie ending right there. And it's such a gangster fucking ending, and it's such an awesome way to have a hitman go out that you almost forgive this movie for being so bad leading up to it.
Bring in the guy who directed The Raid. Like, come on, we can do...
Exactly. Even that, like, even bring in... what's his name? What's that dude's name? He's in, he's like Filipino Bruce Lee. Who is this dude? Who's the dude I'm thinking of? Tony Jaa. I'm thinking of Tony Jaa. Like, bring in Tony Jaa. Like, have him be it. You know? It's... Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he's Taiwan. He's Thai. You know, he's from Thailand. You know, bring that motherfucker in, you know? Bring Tony Jaa into this movie. Have him be Nick Cage, you know? And... I mean, it was, granted, this was 2008, so he was doing Ong Bak at the time, but, and arguably that's definitely the better choice in this case, you know, it's, the only way he should be in this movie is if Nick Cage is somehow, like, the gangster in this movie. Like, you remove this terrible Thai gangster, put Nick Cage in that role, let him Nick Cage it up a bit. And then let Tony Jaa be Hong or Joe or whatever and keep that part of the story the same. And it would be great because Tony Jaa is awesome. But he was in the middle of Ong Bak 2 at the time, which is fairly decent. It's been quite some time since I've seen it, but it is fairly decent. But yeah, I mean, there's so many parts of this movie that you just want to be like, look, let's stop. Let's take a second. Let's figure out what we really want to do here because what we're doing is not working. We need to fix this. Like the whole boat chase that they have has all the urgency of like a car crash. You know, it's like the cars have crashed. and we're just trying to figure out, like, we're just towing them apart, and it's just nice and slow. Nobody gives a shit. But the real exciting part would be the part leading up to the crash, you know? It's like, we don't want the aftermath, which is what this boat chase feels like. It feels like two people, like, bumped each other in a port, or like in a marina, and the other guy tried to leave without leaving a note, and the other guy walked into his boat and like slowly chased after him. It's like, hey man, no, wait, hey man, no, we gotta exchange insurance information. But no, it's so terrible. And even when the one guy, the prime minister, during the prime minister hit, they try so hard to make that look like JFK that I almost had to give them, you know, props for that, because at least that's trying to be stylish. You know, that's trying to give it something. But it fails like everything else. And the only real good part of this is when high Jared Leto gets blown up, you know? It's like, at least
it's funny how much I enjoy Jared Leto's pain in movies.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, when other things make you think of Jared Leto dying, that's a plus. But that's the only good thing about this movie. There's nothing else good going on here, you know? It sucks. And then, the most confusing of all is the final shot of this movie is just Kong standing on a dock, like, as, like, a camera goes by him, and he's just kind of, like, looking at the camera, and it's like the end of a very bad, like, early 2000s nu metal video, where the lead singer is just kind of done with his whatever he's done this whole performance, and he's just kind of standing there looking out at the scenery.
Yeah.
It's like, this is terrible. What are we doing? Why?
And the music in this movie was so weird. I spent the entire movie thinking, why does it sound like Twilight? Like, I feel like
exactly.
The music in this movie sounds exactly like Twilight, and they use the same exact blue hue as Twilight. I was like, what's going on here?
Yeah. I mean, it was 2008, man. Wasn't that the same year as Twilight?
Yep.
So it's all the same. Everything had to be blue. Yeah, it's just not good. It is not good. And the thing is, Nick Cage needs to be able to Nick Cage. He can't be reserved. He can't, even in Leaving Las Vegas, he gets to be Nick Cage. And it won him a fucking Oscar, you know? Then, after this, the next year, he gets to be Nick Cage, because he goes into Knowing. He does Knowing the next year. And then apparently he was in that movie G-Force after that. And then you want to talk about Nick Caging it up. He was in Nick Cage, Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. That is a phenomenal bad Nick Cage movie, but he cages the shit out of that movie. And then Kick-Ass, where he's, you know, the dad, Sorcerer's Apprentice, Season of the Witch is terrible. And then we get to the movie that we'll be talking about next. So, Mike, how's your mead holding up?
It's doing good. I'm feeling more and more like a Viking with every sip, you know?
That's right.
Yeah, ginger and honey, great mixture.
Nice. Yeah, my drippy popsicle was very good. Now I've moved on to Three's Brewing, which is in Garnerville, New York. It's Volition, which is their black lager. And black lagers always are weird to me, because they look like they should taste like a porter, but they do not. They never do. What?
I love black lagers.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah. But they're like those mind tests where, like, you read a color, but it's like the word pink, but it's written in green. And you got to say the word, or you got to say the color of the letter. You know, it's like just little like tricks. But now we're on the drive angry. So at this point, I will say, Amber Heard fans, I'm going to compliment one thing about the woman and say that in 2011, you couldn't get anywhere near her, because she is white fuck you hot. Like, she is white hot in this movie. This is a gorgeous woman. She is insanely attractive in this movie. But
you can almost see why Johnny Depp went for it.
Right, exactly. You can almost see why he allowed her to take a shit in his bed. You know? And that's the problem with watching it after their trial, knowing that she took a shit in bed. You know, it's like, oh boy. How do I reconcile the feelings I'm having right now? You know? It's like Troy from Community says, I have the weirdest boner right now. But this movie is directed by a guy who has made a couple terrible but great movies, Patrick Lussier. Dracula 2000, which is not good, but is phenomenally bad. And then the My Bloody Valentine, the remake, the 3D remake, which is...
with decent. What's his name from Supernatural?
Exactly, yeah, Jansen Ackles. But it's decent, but like the original's so bonkers that this one being a little more toned down is kind of stupid. But we are introduced to the town of Laughter, Colorado. And just from right there, I was like, yep, I'm in. Just what a dumb fucking name.
This movie, negative 10 to 10 scale. We're looking at a solid negative 7.
Absolutely. Solid. Absolutely. Because we also got Nick Cage playing John Milton. Now, Mike, what other John Milton have we talked about on this podcast?
So I hear Milton and I think of Office Space.
No, the character of John Milton has been talked about. He also has something to do with the devil.
Oh, is it Devil's Advocate?
It's Pacino's character in Devil's Advocate. The literal devil is named John Milton in that. And that is Cage's character in this one. The man who has escaped from hell with the God Killer to stop a cult from sacrificing his granddaughter. By granddaughter, I mean his infant granddaughter.
And where Charlie Swan is the fucking cult leader.
Fucking Bella's dad is the cult leader. It's amazing. And of course, the
music in this, I swear, it's like every Wrangler commercial ever. Just take the music from that, like that hard guitar coming in.
Yes. What? And I mentioned it with Bangkok Dangerous. Did you notice that the song that first plays over the end credits? It's Weston Cage's song. It's his Nick Cage's son's shitty black metal band.
I had no idea.
does that song. I was like, oh my God, he finally got him involved. Because that, I remember hearing about that and being like, no. I can't check that out. I'll have too much fun listening to it. But no, it turns out it's terrible. And they used it for Drive Angry. But then, how else do you know that you're in the year 2011 when none other than Katie Mixon shows up? Remember that run of about 3 years where she was in literally every movie?
Yeah.
She played every southern, I'm not going to say slut, but like horny southern chick in almost every movie in the year 2011 to about 2010, 2012-ish, something like that. But, and of course, yes, our favorite Amber Heard shows up. Aquaman's wife shows up. I'll give her credit. Amber Heard, as gorgeous as she is, definitely has that like trailer trash prom queen like look to her.
When she like punches her boyfriend and spits in his face at the like early in the movie, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm like, if the Amber Heard case didn't happen, I would be all about this character. Oh, yeah.
I would watch an entire movie of her just beating the shit out of dudes and be like, you know what? I'm here for it. I am here for it. But it's crazy because she has the perfect look and perfect attitude for this type of movie. Like, every move she makes in this movie, you believe. Like, you'd be like, yes, this is exactly how this character would react, this character Piper. But then you have to kind of watch it in the year 2011, because you can't watch it nowadays and see her any other way than in a post-trial world, you know, a post-trial light. It just can't happen. And I'm not saying she's not attractive because of that. She's still a good-looking woman, but there is that element of, yeah, she's fun to look at, but I don't want her taking a shit in my bed. You know? That's never something guys are like, oh, that chick looks kind of scary. She's probably great in bed. No, in this case, it'd be, that chick looks kind of scary. She's probably great in bed. Then she'll take a shit in that bed, and I'll have to wake up covered in her shit, because that's what she does. It's like, I wish I'd never learned this. I wish I had never learned this.
Yeah. Yeah, that does. It does put a damper on.
It does. It ruins it, you know? And it's like, just by, like, also, by association, like, you see Johnny Depp in a movie nowadays, and you're like, oh, man, that dude woke up in someone's shit. You know? He was covered in his wife's shit at one point in one morning. They had the worst breakfast you could ever possibly think of. Where they discussed who shit in the bed and why it was on him. You know?
Okay. There's an obscure connection between this movie and My Bloody Frank and My Bloody Valentine.
Oh, yeah?
So her boyfriend, who she spits in the face of, you know, like the dude in the sex scene at the start of My Bloody Valentine that gets his head smashed in with a with the mining hammer or the mining shovel, the pickaxe.
Yes.
That is him.
Nice. Yeah, that explains it, because he's also one of the writers of this movie, and I believe a writer in that movie too. It's basically the same character in this that he kind of plays.
As the writer, he's like, you know what? I'm going to make myself in some sort of relationship with a hot, crazy chick.
Yeah, why not? And I mean,
he's going to assault me.
Yeah. Yeah, while I'm having sex, too. You know? So he at least gets to get laid first and then get beat up. But
he also gets a great line in this. He's like, you're going to find a better man than me. In Florida, no shot. In Texas, maybe.
Maybe. Right. Yeah, and then of course she drives off in his car, in his Charger, to the legendary Peaches song, Fuck the Pain Away. Mm-hmm. I remember when that song came out, I was like, wait, is this a real song? Holy shit, it is. Oh my god.
Did you ever watch Letterkenny?
No, I've not.
So, there is a very funny sitcom on Hulu, Canadian, but there is one episode where they're at a wedding, and it's a gay wedding, and the characters getting married are, like, a big part of their show. They're hilarious. And they're like, next we'll have our first dance for the grooms on a song that they're choosing, and it was Fuck the Pain Away.
Of course. Of course it was. It's a legendary song. It's the most romantic song you can think of. But and then who comes sashaying into this movie but one Bill Fichtner, who is phenomenal. He's one of those dudes that when he's in a movie, you're like, yes, Bill Fichtner is here. This character may not be big, but he will make it memorable. And for people who don't know his name right off the by knowing his name, if you've seen The Dark Knight, you've seen the beginning. He's the guy in the bank that the Joker puts the grenade in his mouth and says, before he says, you, or after he says, you and your friends are dead. You're dead. That's Bill Fichtner. Bill Fichtner in this movie as the accountant is great. He is phenomenal.
Oh my, the scene where he is just driving the hydrogen truck in and like as it's crashing, he's just like casually stepping out.
Nope. Yep. And he's like whistling like while he's driving it too.
Oh god, what song is playing when he's driving it? It's hilarious.
I don't remember. I just know that fucking Tom Atkins is in this movie for all of 30 seconds. And it literally looks like they woke Tom Atkins up and told him to put on the dumbest clothes he had and then come to set. He is wearing this fucking t-shirt that's like, it's one of those t-shirts that you see, it's like created by an algorithm that like your aunt always posts on Facebook. Where it's like proud Horace, father of a daughter, and if whatever, it's one of those like formulaic ones that just are created by inputs. And or it's like old Chevy man, blah blah blah. No, something like it's just some dumbass Facebook t-shirt. But he's wearing it nice and proud. Just walking into this cut into this crime scene as the sheriff of the town. It's like Tom Atkins is probably like, you know what? I am legendary actor Tom Atkins. I have shit on better scripts than this. So I'm gonna show up in whatever I want to do, you know? So fuck you. Well, this is how I'm showing up, you know.
I'm trying to think, was Mr. Sandman playing when that was going on?
Should have been.
It's like some weird upbeat song, and he's just like sipping tea as his car is crashing. He's like casually taking a step out because like, we didn't bring up the fact that Nick Cage. Like, oh wait, we did bring up the fact, but like I feel like it's not talked about enough in the movie that Nick Cage escaped from hell.
Yeah, he escaped from hell, and
this isn't
he's
just
got
fucking
these...
crazy redneck Taken. This is crazy redneck Taken, where the guy whose daughter or granddaughter was taken is a demon.
Yeah, he's got literal god powers, like demon powers. He can heal, you know, and he's got like super healing. He shot through the eye at one point. Is only has like a swollen eye for like two scenes, and then it heals up again. With a different color pupil, so you know, I guess that it was shot out before. But yeah, he shot a bunch. But apparently at the end, he can die if he gets shot enough in the gut, I guess. It's not really explained. But he's basically out for revenge is what he's out for. And to stop, apparently, because the cult thinks that if they sacrifice this baby, it's going to bring about hell on earth. And it's funny because Bill Fichtner is the accountant. He's the guy essentially that when you die, that's who you see, which makes that one scene with the two like skit like the stoners by like when he goes over the bridge in the car and they come up to like, oh man, you okay? He's like, you almost killed me, man. And he's like, oh, not even close. He's like, I won't even see you again until you're 73. And then he looks at the other guy and he goes, I'll see you in 3 months.
But it's also like where he's like, oh, you're gonna live forever. He's like, well, if you mean the next 5 seconds, I guess you're right.
Exactly. And it's even funnier because at one point he even lays it out that the devil Satan hates innocent sacrifice because it makes him look bad. So it's like this is even funnier that these dudes are literally just crazy. But we're still treating it with all the severity of the end of the world. Like, we are literally told by Satan's representative that none of this will matter. We are treating it as if it's the biggest thing in the world at this moment.
Which leads me to where he's like, when Charlie Swan's like, he's like, I have armor. He's like, they've tried to kill me, but I have armor. Nothing of this world can kill me. Did they really need to use the God Killer to kill him?
Probably not. Probably not. There is like a weird mystical thing with him though, but they never explain it because this movie doesn't really explain anything that you'd want it to explain. Like you kind
of
want it.
Carrying around the femur of one of your victims is one of the most ice cold things a cult leader can do.
Oh, it is certified number one gold standard badassery right there. Like that's evil shit right there. And
also, they never deny the fact. Nick Cage is like, you put my daughter on your knees and she made you pay for it. Didn't she, dickless?
He
was there and he shoots him so he can't say anything.
Yeah, she bit off his dick, which is great. I mean, there's so much about this movie that, and it's like a cool hour and 45. Like, it's a quick movie. You kind of want that extra 15 minutes to get it to 2 hours just so we can get a little more backstory of, A, how did Nick Cage break out of hell? Like, how did he escape hell with this God Killer weapon? B, I kind of want to see a little bit of the interaction between the accountant and Satan. Like, I kind of want to see the scene where Satan's just kind of like, another infant sacrifice? What are these fucking morons doing? I hate this shit, you know?
I don't know why, but I feel like Satan should be played by John Hamm if he were to show up in this movie.
Yeah, that would be phenomenal. Like, that would have been great. And, that would have been a great Satan. Because 2011, I think, was like either beginning or peak Mad Men. So he might have been able to actually do it, you know? And it's, there's just so much. Yeah, peak Mad Men was 2011.
Imagine and, they bring in Al Pacino and saying, another infant sacrifice. It's
like, oh, another. Just have him do like a bunch of like Al Pacino noises. Like, don't even have him say words. Like, oh, okay. just have him be John and just like have him be John Milton from Devil's Advocate and then like bring it up that Nick Cage is also John Milton for some reason. It's like, have that character, like that little interaction come up.
Yes, like, okay.
Oh, okay. But I mean,
instead of Charlie Swan getting killed by the God Killer, at the end the accountant's just like, yo, Satan, do you want to just come up here and like deal with this guy? And Al Pacino just beats the shit out of him. Like, no Satan powers, he just fucks him up.
Beats him up. Yeah, I mean, it's, this movie's wild. Like, and it's, as far as I can tell, it's not based off of anything. Like, it's just like an original property, which is great. Because someone took the time to kind of make like a stupid original movie and put Nick Cage in it. And you're like, because the weirdest thing, did you see what Nick Cage, like what got him to do this movie?
No.
It's the scene where he gets shot in the eye. Now, I can't remember what the other, I think it was Season of the Witch is the movie he wanted to do that in. But they were like, no. We're not, no, your character's not losing an eye for no reason. You know, it's only that. He's like, fine, whatever. And then this movie comes, he's like, done. I'm losing an eye. I'm in.
That's all I need. Besides Spy Kids 3D Game Over, this might be the one movie that benefits from cheesy scenes meant for 3D.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is the thing. It was, you know, during the high 3D craze and all that. But yeah, it's,
and it was like the bad 3D. Like, it was like, you had the 3D era in the early 2000s where it was like, oh, the 3D movies were like hyper colorful. Like, yeah, it doesn't look real. It's not meant to look real. Then you had this era of 3D where you had movies like Avatar where it was meant to give it more depth. But then you had movies like this where it's like, and like, I would say like the Final Destination, where it's like you're gonna see bullets flying at you and stuff, and it's gonna be really dumb. Well, that adds to this movie.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's not just a gimmick. Like, you can tell it's a gimmick because every time the accountant flips his coin in the air, like it's supposed to look like it's coming right at you and all that. But yeah, it is. It's definitely, you know, the gimmick of it. But it does, like, again, with the rest of this movie, it works. Like, it makes it work, and it's, if they tried to be too, it's great because they don't try to be serious with this movie. There's no, like, not a single person in this movie, I think, is serious. Even Nick Cage is only kind of serious. But then there's the beginning scene. We didn't even talk about the greatest scene in the movie where he's having sex with Charlotte Ross's character. And she is 100% naked. 100% naked. He is fully clothed. Which means that he has only pulled his dick through his fly. And the reason for that he says this is, I never disrobe before gunfire. So, A, he knew he was going to be having, this shootout that he ends up having. B, he knew he was going to be having sex before the shootout. And then during the shootout, he continues to have sex with her, which is even better because this is still a consensual sex act. She is not consenting to the gunfire, which is like, wow, I'm having a lot of confusing thoughts right now. But at least she's still kind of getting off. You know, she's traumatized for life, but at least she got to have an orgasm.
The only thing that would have made that scene better, it's like if they were just constantly like showing Nick Cage making her switch positions as, like, she had the dodge blitz and do different
and she's, like, parties. Really into it, and, like, actually, like, yeah, like, he's going with
you
it.
You don't even have to show it. Any nudity. Like, you can do enough to imply the position changes where it's, like,
right.
Tactical position changes, tactical sexual position changes.
That's right. Yeah, I don't think anybody's, I'm at least on my knowledge, no one's done that in a movie. And that's definitely something for a Nick Cage movie. Like, that's something that you need to have in a Nick Cage movie. And it would have been great. But alas, we do not get it. And the funny thing is, this movie, everyone was kind of like, this movie's like, meh, there's nothing going on here. It's crap. And the CGI in it is not awful. It's absolutely terrible.
It looks terrible. The soundtrack is objectively not good, but hilarious for what it is.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like I said, Weston Cage has a fucking song over the end credits, and it's terrible. But then after this, he does... This is like the string of... Wait, that's a movie? Movies that Nick Cage does. So we go Seeking Justice, Trespass, Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance, right there. That's the big one. Stolen, The Frozen Ground, The Croods, Joe, Rage, Outcast, Left Behind, Dying of the Light, The Runner, Hey the Ghost, which I have seen. It is terrible. But it's also, like, bad terrible. It's not, like, Nick Cage terrible. It's bad terrible. It's almost like Bangkok Dangerous bad, you know? Yeah. And then The Trust, Dog Eat Dog, Snowden, USS Indianapolis, Men of Courage, Army of One, Arsenal, Vengeance, A Love Story, Inconceivable, Nada's Mom and Dad, 2017, which... I talked about it. It's on Hulu. It's great. You should watch it. The Humanity Bureau. Dark. Of course, Mandy in 2018. Phenomenal Cage. Looking Glass. 2:11. Teen Titans Go to the Movies, where he plays Superman. Between Worlds. Of course, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. He plays Spider-Man Noir. A Score to Settle. Color Out of Space, the Lovecraft one, see our episode on Cage Madness. Running with the Devil, Kill Chain. Mind you, I am only in 2019 at this point. Primal, Grand Isle, Jiu-Jitsu, The Croods, A New Age, Prisoners of the Ghostland in 2021. That's where he has the bombs on his nuts. Willy's Wonderland in 2021, that is the silent Nick Cage in Five Nights at Freddy's. Hig, where it's culinary, high-class world, like high-class food world, John Wick, basically. And then here's where it begins. The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent in 2022. Then he goes back. Butcher's Crossing, The Old Way, Renfield, Flash, which has that cameo of Superman, Sympathy for the Devil, Dream Scenario, and The Retirement Plan. So this man, in 2023, is still going strong. He is still Nick Cage. He is still doing blockbusters like Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which was a big hit for him. And even Renfield. Well, like, people saw Renfield because of him, you know?
You know, I wonder why more Nickelback songs aren't in Nick Cage movies.
Dude, they're perfect for it. You know, they are perfect. Drive Angry could have been filmed.
Wait. Did you know Chad Kroeger, lead singer of Nickelback, likes to do nativity scenes?
Does he really?
So, like, I saw a thing where he played, like, Joseph. He played a shepherd. He played a donkey in one. But he never made it as a wise man.
Listen to Mike. Oh man, on that note, we will end this episode on the unkillable Nicolas Cage.
I had to force the introduction for that joke just to get that joke
here. It was worth it. I'll tell you, it was worth it. I liked it. But, Mike, where can people find us on the internet?
Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or just about anywhere else you get your podcast from. Thanks to Spotify Podcast. You'll also find us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Happy Hour Films Podcast.
All right. Now, next week, we'll begin 2024. New year, a new us. Now, I am expecting my second child in the very beginning of this year, on the 2nd of January. So, I'm just going to preface that there may be some odd recording schedules. We may have to push a release or two. I'm not going to say I'm going to be 100% available, but there may be some scheduling weirdness, let's say. So
we're setting it up that at max, we're watching two movies a week for the most part.
We're capping it at two, but we are doing some long form themes. Like, whereas Mike and I used to rack our brains trying to figure out something new for each month, that's not going to be the case in 2024. We have 4 month blocks of themes here. So the first 4 months of the year have been planned. They are not locked in stone, but they are planned. And we are going to do movies that are basically the same. And we're going to start off with Battle Royale and The Hunger Games. That's how we're going to start.
Kind of versus thing where we're going to be directly comparing the movie and say what one movie does better than the other, which movie we would recommend more type of deal.
Yeah, basically which one's more successful. Now, as a preface to this, we will be talking about movies that we talked about before, but we're going to be talking about them in a slightly different light, because obviously we've done The Hunger Games. We did a couple months ago. I'm looking ahead. I'm seeing 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm seeing at least 4 movies that we've already done on this show.
Oh, we've been doing this podcast for like 3 years now?
Four? Or did we start in 2020?
Yeah, so 3.5. Like, we started kind of, I think May 2020 was the first month we did it.
Oh, it's been a while. It's been a while. But thank you for everyone listening that stuck with us from the beginning, from the early on our phones episodes.
It was only about a month where it was awful.
Yeah, it was just unlistenable. Yeah, we do not recommend the early episodes. But we have perfected it now. Mike and I are professionals. Damn it. There are no flaws in this episode. No flaws. And just like there are no flaws with Hunger Games and Battle Royale being literally the same movie. So until next week, when we start our 2024 off with some murdering of children, I have been Ross Bacon.
I've been Mike McGuigan.
I will see you guys next time. So long.